हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Paramatma Sundarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 2, the Theory of Transformation, Parinama Vada. The two material Purushas are considered to be the Lord for purposes of worship. They are the universe in gross form, Virat, and subtle form, Hiranyagarbha. The wise do not accept these two which I have described to you. They do not worship them as actual forms of the Lord, since they are your material bodies. This is the meaning. Sukadev spoke thus, the verse. It is said in Vishnu Purana, out of mistaken knowledge, those who are not yogis accept the form of the universe, which is visible to be your form, though you are composed of knowledge. Vishnu Purana 1.4, 39. Shruti says, Nedam yad idam upasate. The world which the living entities worship is not the Lord. Kena Upanishad 1.4. According to Ramanuja's commentary, the first idam refers to Brahman, and the second idam refers to the universe. The wise do not accept these forms because they are created by Maya. Maya shishte. They do not arise from the Lord's Sarup Shakti. This is clear that the four-armed form of the Lord is beyond Maya. Should be understood that ordinary human forms made of matter within the universe are often referred to as sattva, rajas, and tamas expansions of the Purusha and Guna avatars, Vishnu, Brahman, Shiva. With this in mind, Markandeya Purana says, Vishnu sharira grahanam aham isha ishana eva cha karitas te yato tas tvam Kash stotum shaktiman bhavet. Since Vishnu, I, Brahma, and Shiva are made to accept bodies by you, Durga, who can sufficiently glorify you? The word sharira, body, means individual bodies of living entities. Since, if it were to mean actual bodies of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, before accepting the bodies, there would be no distinction of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, and they could not be so designated. Sarva Sambandhini. Vritti. In this commentary, the author presents and refutes arguments of Brahma Parinamavad, as proposed by Bhaskara and others, and Vivartavad of the Advaita school, who propose fallacious theories to substantiate material causality of Brahman.
It was explained in the beginning that there are two forms of the Lord, Hiranyagarbha and Virat.
Yes.
These forms are made by Maya.
It's all Maya, because it's the universal form is the all the options of the combinations of the material energy that you can get in the way of forms and senses and situations and everything like that. So all that's from that. So the material universe is created from that Virat Roop. Mm-hmm. Right? But the point is that the potency that why it even works, that's because Vishnu is there. So in this way, then you're bringing out the aspect as Vishnu. When you want to show how Vishnu is in control of his energies, then it's Vishnu. When you're showing how he is above and not affected by the material energy, then you show that side. It's just a matter of which it is. Because you see, as soon as you say it's the Lord, then they'll go, oh, but then he's material. No, he's beyond the gunas. Okay, so he's not this. No, he is this. So that's the thing. You just go on. It just goes around and around in circles like that. You know, so the point is you have those two aspects. And the gross form, virat, that's what everything's made. A subtle form, hiranyagarbha, just that the principles on which it's based, the metaphysical aspects and all that, on how what goes together, what can go together. Mm-hmm. Means you have the things, but just because you have 20 ingredients doesn't mean they can all go together. Yes. So how, which goes with what, combines, and how it's combined, you get what. Yes. That'll be the subtle. That'll be hiranyagarbha. Because virat means just it's all there. Everything's there. Hiranyagarbha means that creative potency. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's
why these aspects are related to the super soul.
Ah.
Because Paramatma, by definition, is the shelter and controller.
Okay. So shelter is virat and controller is then the Hiranyagarbha. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you also have, you saw before, is that the material energy is, because that's the Lord. He's the shelter and the controller, right? So now, when you reflect that into the material world, or that transformation in the material world, you're going to get, what do you call that? Yeah, upadana and nimitta, right? You're going to have ingredients, which are the shelter. That's the thing. So when you're saying that the shelter, you call it pradhan. When you're talking the unmanifest, you call it avyakta. Like that. And then nimitta means then how the living entities are controlled, how all those things that are sheltered are created, made into things. Mm-hmm. So you're always going to get these two principles. So in the Lord, he is the shelter and the controller. Yeah. Then in his gross form of, the grossest form, then he is virat as the shelter and hiranyagarbha as the controller.
Yeah.
So a super soul, he does all that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Purva Paksha. Okay. They're always ready with something to say. In regards to creation, the following should be considered. The proponents of Vivarta say the following. The gross and subtle material world is produced from ignorance. Brahman, which becomes the subject of the jiva by his ignorance, which is without beginning, changes into vivarta, the universe. Shell changes to silver by illusion. Though Brahman is without change, by ignorance it takes another form. The ignorance is called ajnana or avidya. It is false knowledge. Right, so they're really trying to stretch it here, that Brahman is not changing. It's just as it is. But we see that there's this universe. So in our ignorance, we think that it's all that there is all this variety. But at the same time, is where does that come from? So it has to come from Brahman. So it's only by this change, by ignorance, it takes another form. But at the same time, if it's unchangeable, it can't change whether there's ignorance or not. Because that's what the Upanishads will say, is that Vishnu, he's unchanged by the modes of nature. But they're saying that Brahman is. But at the same time, they're saying it's not. So then it will be Vivarta, it's just then there'll be the aspect of Vivarta, it's just an illusion. Right. That's first. You say it changes. Like this is mechanically how it works, But Brahman can't change. Oh, it's an illusion. So all these different schools are basically just ways to deal with how their philosophy doesn't work. Does that make sense? So they're going to come up with that. But then the jiva. Then how is the jiva there? That's also an illusion. That's also by the ignorance. And so basically, then why do we have, then all this is just, what do we care? We don't exist. Why are we worrying about all this? It doesn't matter what we do. We don't exist. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is that they take it seriously. And they strive for self-realization and everything. They're acharyas, given that as an important aspect. And, So it's they have very inherent problems in their philosophy, very major problems, is that they can't answer these things properly. Because everything's Brahman, but Brahman's unchangeable. Right? And Brahman doesn't have Shaktis, and Brahman doesn't have willpower. So therefore, how could there be creation? It must be illusion. Where does the illusion come from? We don't know. So it's the same thing, like in the modern. There's God, right? He creates the world. Nice. Like that. But then there's evil. Like that. But evil runs on its own. It has no control by God. Right? We can conquer evil, but somehow or another God can't. He's not affected by evil. Okay, cool. But he can't conquer evil, but we can. Really, really messed up. How is it? What's this, you know, how does anything going on? We say, not a blade of grass moves without the Lord. So then, how is it that this ignorance is functioning? You know, where does the devil get his authority? You know, so there's the same thing because they don't. There's not enough understood of the actual Vaishnava philosophy. Then they come up with something weird. You know, there's a respect for Brahman, a respect for Paramatma. But they don't, until you understand Bhagavan, you don't actually understand either of them. Yes?
So they are very much like in the same category as academics. Just producing theories which doesn't work.
It's the material world. That's what people do. Is that by mental speculation, they'll come up with things. Someone will be thinking, go, oh, wow, that means this, which it doesn't. It's just in their mind, it by the modes of nature, it made some significance. And then they get all of them because they're so important, right? They're the center of the universe. Therefore, they have to propagate their philosophy and convince others and other things like that. And that's how you start all these made-up religious elements. You know, so that's why then we stick to the Vedas and try to understand. But then you have to have a proper understanding, because otherwise if you approach the Vedas from mental speculation, you'll get all these. But if you approach it from the proper parampara, then you can avoid these. Right? It means you might be affected by these because of our conditioning, but you do have a basis to remove them, because there is an acceptance of authority, an acceptance of the concept of pure devotion and that service to Krishna. But these others, they don't have that. Like that. So it's the same thing. It comes out in one way, it looks like an academic. If it looks another, it looks like a religionist. If it looks like another, it looks like an impersonalist. Or a Buddhist, or like this. It's the same modes working. Right? It's the same Upadana and same Nimitta working. It's the same three modes of nature. Just you get various combinations. You know what I'm saying? Like in cooking. It's the same ingredients. You have a certain amount of ingredients in your kitchen, and from that you produce so many things. So that's what's going on. And it's significantly different. You give it a different name. Right? If I take all the stuff and put it in a pan, and dough is flat, I'll call it lasagna. But if I do exactly the same thing, but I roll it up in each one and then stick it in there, then it's called cannelloni, right?
Cannoli.
No, cannoli is the...
Cannula.
Cannoli.
No, it's cannelloni.
Cannelloni. Yeah, cannolis are the rolled the sweets that I know.
The
sweets. Okay, with the whipped cream and stuff in it like that.
Also the oil.
The oil, yeah. The oil is also the oil. It's also... You know what I'm saying? Just by that, it changed like that. Now, if I do the same thing but change the spicing, then I call it enchiladas. You know, it becomes Mexican. You know, so... You understand? So, the same thing, you just... Some adjustment and it gets different names. So that's why it's called the world of names. It's the same stuff, but we call it a different name. So, yes.
You were saying, where do you got the authority from? Usually the Christians say they got the authority from God.
So if you got the authority from God... Yeah, okay, then that's nice. So he has the authority from God, so then he has a function he's supposed to be doing. So then they just have to take that as that he's doing his function, but then what's our function? And so we're supposed to worship God. So he's serving God. We're also supposed to be serving God, not him. You know, so you can get. So those who do say that, then that's nice. But others, some also say he lost control, this, that. There's all kinds of theories to explain why things go on. So that's the point. It comes from speculation. That's the difficulty. So mental speculation and attachment, right? Karma. These are the two basic. Everything goes back to these two. And then from that, then each has so many subdivisions, then you start making combinations, you know, and permutations. Because a lot of times, why I say combination means it's a certain things that are combined. Right? And so then if you're taking combinations, you just take the particular list. But a permutation means the same list in a different order.
Yes.
So many times you deal with the combination, and you're supposed to, you know, expect that that aspect of the philosophy is taken care of. But by a permutation, exact same thing, just switching it around or putting the end in the middle or this, then, oh, it's something new again. So that's the difficulty, is that, you know. Does that work?
You mentioned a few days ago that actually only the Vedic theory is applicable, that works.
Yes.
And so, in that sense, anything else is just cheating.
Everything else is cheating.
Yeah.
Means, if it's working, all they've done is observed what is the Vedic principle.
Yeah.
A scientist, see, that's the thing, they have the thing of that science and religion are opposed. Religion means the inherent nature of stuff, something that's already there. And science means observing that.
Yeah.
So the difference is the Veda, you come to that conclusion by Shabda. You hear from authority. Why are you going to go around and use your senses to try to figure out everything? It's already figured out.
Yeah.
And so you hear from Shabda. Then you apply it, then your sense can see it. But modern science, no, we're going to, by our sense, we don't believe it until we see it. You know, which is like Buddhism.
Yeah.
You know? Like that. Does it exist if no one saw it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so like that. So it's the same thing, but they make it into this whole thing of us and them. All it is it's the doing the same thing, just one is more intelligent than the other. In other words, the scientists claim they're more intelligent, and the people who work by Shabda are less intelligent. But who's more intelligent? If I tell you, oh, don't go in there, you know, there's something very, it's not a good place to go into, and this will happen to you if you do. And you say, no, you know, you said, you know, but you're just, you know, that's, what do you call it, subjective, but I'm using, you know, I'm intelligent, I'm using the objective, and I'm going to go in there and see myself, and then they have the problem. More intelligent goes, oh, okay, and don't go in there. So that's the thing, the modes of nature reverse things. So the scientists think they're the most intelligent. They may have the most mechanical intelligence, but the use of it for their own personal development, they're the most foolish. You know, they can't even tie their own shoelaces and stuff. You know, it's like that. You know, it's just... So that's the thing. It's modes of nature are very far out. That they switch everything. So it's just a matter of, this is how it is. So the same thing applied in India. Well, look, you'll get the smartas, you'll get the logicians, you'll get the religion. When you go into the non-Vedic, you'll have basically same kind of thing. It's just that it may get a different name because it's slightly different flavor. You know, they're not following the Vedic tradition, but they're following their own tradition. You know, in our family, we've done this for the last, you know, 400 years. They're smartas, you know, because they think if we do this, things will work out nice for us. Our family has been well situated, well respected, you know, wealthy, in power, and so we just keep doing the same thing. Why change it? You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it, you know? And that kind of element. Yes?
What is the difference between Anuman Praman and realization?
Anuman and realization. Anuman is intellectualizing on something to try to make it practical. Realization means understanding, means you start to see how it fits together. Only by application of that you know, then you get realization on what its value is and how it's used. Like that. So it's a progression. You hear, remove doubts, then you apply it, you understand, you continue up applying it, you get realization.
So for realization, hearing has to be there.
Hearing and practice. From hearing only, without practice, you'll clear doubts. You might get a little bit of an understanding. But unless you apply it, you don't get a proper understanding. Unless you continue to apply it, you don't get realization. So, others think as follows. So that's one group. Brahman does not become another form, since it is by nature without a second. There is a memory that this is that. Sankar says, what is this imposition, adhyasa? It is said that it takes the form of memory. Because of having seen previously somewhere else, it manifests like a shadow. Brahman is the material cause of the universe, or is non-different from it because of non-difference with what was remembered. Right.
Can you remember?
We're remembering, but how it is that we're even without thinking, it's all being nicely remembered. You know, like that wall there. Why is it always there? And whether we remembered or not, and new guests come, they also see the same wall. It's like this. You sit in a stone monastery with nothing there, nothing good to eat, nothing else to do but sit around and speculate. Right? No engagement of the senses, nothing. You come up with stuff like this.
They should get internet.
Yeah, but then if you do that, then the same people will come up with Marvel and yeah. Yes.
I just want to take a step back and ask you, as Vaishnavas, are we trying to establish that the Vishnu is the cause of Upadana? Is that the topic we discuss right now? Is that what is the...
Yes, because it's on Parinamavad. So it means Vishnu is the cause of creation, because it's his energies who transform. So by his will, his energies transform, you get the material manifestation. Right? So that goes very easily. All these other things, then they bring up more questions than are answered.
Yeah.
That's the difficulty, because it's just like if you're trying to put something together with not all the elements in the equation, it's a problem. You know, it's just like if I'm trying to cook, but I leave out the frying pan, or I have the frying pan and the fire, but there's no ingredients, or I have the ingredients, frying pan, but there's no spoon to stir it, or there's, you know, you leave something out, you know, then it can't work. So only the devotees have the proper full understanding. That's the whole point. So because that's the natural state, is that relationship with the Lord, then you're seeing here that you're trying to remove all the various kinds of doubts and misgivings that can be there that get in the way of our appreciating the Lord. Because that's all you're dealing with here. So all these technical points are the various kinds of doubts you can have. And then those doubts can manifest. See, here you're dealing, going back to kind of the original source. But when you come down from there, then they can manifest as you drop it down, because you're looking at it in Vijnanamaya. But if you drop it down into the other three, then you can end up with all kinds of strange stuff. Right? And so, because they're working with less, then they're not going to get the complete. So only when you're working with Anandamaya, you know, with the Lord Himself, the transcendental consciousness, then you can see how that then is coming down into Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they're working with less information, and so they're coming up with strange things. And because they're based on the material platform and there's a material motive, therefore there's an attachment. So either there's a desire for liberation or a desire for enjoyment. You know, as you were saying, when you're dealing in the class and you... If you just go through, you know, you know, you hear Prabhupada's purport and the point being made and a few things here and there, and the main thing is either something in management or Sankirtan, then we're used to that, and so we won't analyze. Right? And then, but when you get down and analyze, then you start seeing that there's attachment to karma and jnana. But the devotee doesn't know that it's there. So that's what all this is for, is addressing those points. But there has to be that point of desiring pure devotion, then they can get beyond that. You know, otherwise then, you know, like we were discussing, you know, a few days back in that, is that, let us say I was in the kitchen and I dropped something on my foot and my foot got injured. So now what's the main thing? The main point is be careful about what you're dealing with on the counter. You know, and how you're dealing with it there, where you put it, how you hold it, like that. So various ways that you could, something could fall through the space onto your foot. So that's the important point. And if you do that, your problem's solved. But now, what we see is what comes up in the conversation is they demand to know at what velocity was it following. You know, did it spin? Did it twist? You know, like that, how many times did it spin or how much did it twist? And all that, is that because then the foot got cut like this and like that? And all they're worrying about is all that rather than, no, just don't drop anything, your foot won't get hurt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They're getting overwhelmed by, you know, this detail and that detail, which doesn't matter. One, it's beyond their understanding, and two, it doesn't matter. You do what's positive and the negative is taken care of. If I don't drop things on my foot doesn't get hurt. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's then what we're looking at. Is this good or?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. So it's just a matter of trying, finding a way to cut through, you know, because you present the positive, and that's the most important thing to do. Like Prabhupada just talked about pure devotional service, that positive, and then devotees would catch that, and they do. They didn't necessarily know the technicalities, but they were convinced of that. But then we see is that in an approach to improve the quality of the technique, the principle is lost. Why? Because of all these misunderstandings of the philosophy, as Jiva Goswami is discussing. And because of that, and depending upon which layer of consciousness and mode that they're applying it to, then it comes out in a particular way, as some, you know, some particular modern issue or some other thing like that. And so then, but you have to keep the principle, and it's descending. That's the important. Then you bring down, these are details. So we're looking, no, these are more important. Because in the modern society, there is only going up. So unless you start in the right place, the idea is you won't get to the right place. But the point is, if it hasn't descended, you're not going to get there. So that's the whole thing. You know, it's just like, you know, I have to hold my hand here, you know, for grabbing the rope. But they haven't dropped the rope yet. No, but I have to hold my hand here. Unless you hold your hand here, then you can't call yourself a grabber of the rope. And then they drop the rope and it's over here. Yes, so my hand is here. The rope's in the wrong place, you know. So this is bogus. You know, it has to be here because my hand is here. Just move your hand over here, grab the rope. So the whole thing is the descending, you adjust with the descending, rather than you adjust the descent to your ascending concept. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's just, you're giving the positive, but now and again you have to deal with the negative, because otherwise that's how people think. They think in the negative, they don't think in the positive. So you have to address it sometimes. But you can't over-address it, as Krishna, you saw Krishna in the 11th canto says, enough of pointing out what's right and wrong. Overemphasis of that is also wrong, because that's not the point. That this is wrong, that's correct, that's the fact. But overemphasizing it, that's not the point. It's to do the right thing. If we only talk about what's wrong, then who learns what's right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you talk about what's wrong enough to inspire them what's right. You talk about right as long as they're doing right. As soon as they start to do wrong, you have to point that out. So you're always using balance. Mm-hmm. Huh? Yes?
Whereas the Lord expands as Purusha avatars for creation of material world. How do they understand that it's not transformation of Vishnu? Because Vishnu should remain the same. So it's
like, why would there be a transformation? It's an expansion. It's the same person.
It's not called a transformation.
Does he not have the same qualities and do the same stuff? Yes. The effect is not the same? So then transformation means now you're getting a different effect. I take water, I transform it into ice. Is there not a different effect? You're thirsty, I give you a glass of water that's solidly frozen, you know. Go for it. If you keep holding on to it, the warmth of your hands will slowly melt it. So you can sit there and get, you know, one drop at a time until the whole thing comes out and hits you in the nose. So transformation means it's gone into that, it's not the same, like milk into yogurt. It's yogurt, it gives a different effect. One's heating, one's cooling. Does that make sense? Now, so therefore the example is given of the candle. The candle, you light one candle with the next, and they all have the same potency. So they're all the same. But when you take transformations, milk goes into yogurt, then that's... Yes, like Shiva. So, yes. So, bottom line, Shiva is a transformation. He is not in the position of Vishnu, never will be in the position of Vishnu, and has not ever been in the position of Vishnu.
I'm trying to understand the way Brahman cannot transform, so he's transforming.
No, let's just start with the root. Shiva is not God. Okay? So, he is like that. So it's not that, okay, Shiva's a transformation, so Vishnu's a transformation, so then Vishnu and Shiva, they're both transformations, so therefore then, you know, Shiva being the original transformation, therefore he's superior to Vishnu. No?
Brahman cannot transform, I don't understand that. Not the who is supreme.
We are in India, man.
Hmm?
We are in India.
I'm just saying it's like this. What about this? This? What about this? This? What about that? This is expansion or incarnation. Huh? Okay. Okay. Uttara. What else could be said? Previously it was stated that ignorance is not possible in Brahman. Then how can duality be produced from it? And if ignorance takes shelter of Brahman to produce the jiva, Brahman would be afflicted with suffering which arises from ignorance like an ordinary human. Right? Because as soon as there's ignorance, there's suffering. Brahman would not be apahata pa-ma, devoid of sin. Moreover, ignorance means false knowledge, mistaking something for something else, right? Because that's they're trying to say the rope and the snake. One is aware of qualities afterwards because that original object has qualities. For instance, the mistaken appearance of silver manifests in a shell after recognizing qualities like whiteness in the silver. False knowledge of mistaken qualities can never arise from pure Brahman, which has no qualities. Thus, how does Brahman change into the universe by ignorance? Right? Because you're saying, oh, it's memory of something else, but where is that memory from? Where would the transformation come from? Brahman is never affected by ignorance. So how can there be any change that therefore you're remembering something from before? That means there must be the ignorance in Brahman, but that means it's changeable. It's against their philosophy. By what does one accept similarity and mistaken identity? By heat and cold, opposite qualities. Or the Sarpa Gandha plant and Ketaki Gandha. The fragrance of the Kiora plant. So I guess there's Sarpa Gandha plant and Ketaki Gandha. Moreover, does this, so they must look the same, but smell slightly different or something. Moreover, does this false knowledge, thinking Brahman to be something else, actually exist or does it not exist? If it actually exists, it proves duality. But how was it produced? Because the point is then it establishes duality, then the problem comes is how is Brahman's non-dual? So you can't get that. And how is that produced? How did you have something? Where did this ignorance come from? That, therefore, is doing... What's the mechanics of how Brahman becomes like this? If it does not exist, it means the illusion itself is imaginary. Like a flower in the sky in yogurt. It's even better. like a flower in the sky in yogurt. I've heard flower in the sky, but this is flower in the sky in yogurt. Do you ever have that problem, sitting there looking at your yogurt and then you're seeing flowers in the sky inside? No?
No conflict.
No conflict. As long as it tastes all right, it doesn't matter. That's funny. Flower in the sky in yogurt. So... That if it's not produced and it's imaginary, it means the whole illusion itself is imaginary, so there's no illusion. They're trying to say it's all illusion, but that means the illusion has to be real. Otherwise, the illusion itself is not real. That means there's no illusion. Because they're trying to say, no, material world's an illusion. It's not real. But then, is illusion real? If it's not real, then what's the problem? There's nothing. Why are you worrying about nothing? You know, it's like the man who, you know, in his dream sees a tiger and he's worried, and no one else is worried about the tiger. Like that, because it doesn't exist. Purva Paksha. Ignorance and the universe exist continuously without beginning. Right? So now you have two. The universe, the ignorance is there, universe is there without beginning, and Brahman is there. So now you have three. Right? Somehow they always end up in three, right? Because Krishna's three, so they always end up in three.
They have to merge, because if you make dualism, then it's obvious that the ignorance, the Brahman should be the cause of ignorance. They have to avoid that, so then they have to include a third party.
Okay. Oh, then that, with the third party, you get distracted. Okay. The previous universe is the cause of latter ignorance. You know, it's like karma or something. Illusion generated from impressions depends only on previous perception. But if you don't exist, why is it there? And then if the previous universe has impressions in it, and therefore we gain on those. What's the continuity? What would be the purpose of that? Why would that be there? Why would that have anything to do with us? You know, because if we're not that, why would we be relating with it? You know, so the whole point is see, their big problem comes down to is that because they don't accept Shaktis and Shaktiman. So then, dealing on this level, they can't work it out. Since you're dealing with impersonal, but why would these things happen unless there's a person? You know, unless there's willpower, why would there be creation? Why would there be transformation? Because action comes from willpower. like that, yeah. In perceiving that what one thinks is real and what is perceived is actually false. Since one can see nothing except illusion. You're seeing illusion and you're working on previous impressions of illusion. Right? By ignorance, the universe manifests. By the universe, ignorance manifests. Right? You know. But you say that and everybody just leaves it alone. If I said, by ignorance, the universe manifests. By the universe, ignorance manifests. And you go, whoa. You know, it doesn't make sense. This guy's a genius. You know, that's how it works. Bogus philosophies work like that. Is this a fault? Right? Is it a fault? And then people don't know. They don't understand. No, it's not a fault. No, there is no fault because of the explanation of the blind leading the blind. But there is a blind person leading a blind person, a real blind person leading a real blind person falling in a real ditch. So, end quote. Shankara, in denying Ishwar as the sole controller, says, mutually taking shelter of each other in the present time as in the past is not a fault. It is like a blind person taking shelter of another blind person. So Shankara throws these things out, and then they just catch them. But what he's not denying, Ishwar is the sole controller, because he's the overall controller. But then there's our involvement in the illusion, how we're involved, and that's by our own attachment, by our own polluted consciousness. And yes, then with the mind going with it, you do have the previous samskaras. But but that's all concrete for us because we're consciousness, so therefore its effect on our consciousness is real. Like that. So they're taking everything, it's just illusion. It may be that it's something that's not important because of the temporary nature of it. So therefore it's not important for the soul. Like you're hungry and I say, yeah, you can eat this loda. You know, you could say, well, that's an illusion. I can't eat that loda. You know, does that make sense? But the loda exists. So the problem is they come up with these, they're taking part of the truth, but not all the truth. Right? Because why would you take all the truth? Right? For these Maya bodies. Because they don't believe in God. So if they don't believe in God, there's no reason to tell the truth. Right? Because then if you have an absolute standard, then you have truth that then it's based on. Otherwise, if there's no absolute, then you can speculate. You say this is true, that says, you know, like yesterday we came up with, you know, mother saying one thing, the son saying, no, that's your opinion, you know. That's one way to look at it. You know, there's other ways to look at it. Yeah, you can. But then there's the absolute. So, yeah. And then, sometimes it is seen that silver, which exists in one place, is manifest as illusion in another place. The universe is not accomplished by mistaking an actual universe for Brahman. Rather, one should accept that the universe appears by falsely imposing previous illusions of the universe from time without beginning. So they're saying that the previous universe is imposing upon this universe, which doesn't exist, that it exists. Even though the previous universe, by that same logic, doesn't exist because it's an imposition from the previous one that doesn't exist. And that's been going on eternally. So when you get to this level, because it's so nice for speculation, intellectuals leave it alone. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you're super hungry and someone brings something to eat. You don't worry about where it's from. You know? You just eat. So that's the whole thing, is because they like to speculate, that's their taste. Therefore, when they get something that's so good to speculate on, which means Shankara does, then they don't question it. Because if you question it, then your speculation is over, and they don't want that. So their arguing is to keep speculation going. That's the academics. They don't like conclusion because the speculation stops. So they argue not to establish actually what's the truth, but that what you're saying as truth gets in the way of me being able to speculate. Therefore, yours has to be removed. Not that we'll replace it with actual truth. No, we're not interested in actual truth. We're interested in the process of speculation. Otherwise, why would they have a principle if you can't establish conclusions? It means you use the term, meaning I've wrapped up this whole speculation into a very nice package, and so I'll say in conclusion, therefore, then this. And then we'll take it as fact as long as we can still speculate on it. But if it's a fact, why are they speculating on it? Why are they coming up that it's something else? Well, you see, from the Vedic, the more you understand of the mechanics of that, the more you see that's what's happening in your life. The problems are happening from that, by how those mechanics work. It's not something else. But here, so their theories, then they find holes, and then they come up with something new, and that creates a hole, so they just keep going around in circles. You know, so they were saying about how, remember before it was, when I was a kid, Neanderthal was you know, the main one before. Then, you know, in the recent past, no Neanderthal. I just saw the other day a thing about how, you know, all the Europeans are all connected back to the Neanderthal. It's kind of like, what are you talking about? You know? So it's just, it keeps going around and saying, something that doesn't, they just throw it out and move on. And they're happy. Why? Because it's speculation. It's not about finding truth. It's about continuing the speculation. Because if they have conclusion and everything's concluded, now what do you do? Right? Then what's left? You have to apply it. And they don't want to apply it. Because if they had to apply it, they wouldn't get a job. No?
No, it seems that the Mayavadiya means sannyasi, which means because they live by begging, so they don't know how to work.
That's there. But they've also chosen that because they would rather not work, they'd rather speculate. While those who have the inclination towards the impersonal philosophy and are willing to work, then they're grihasthas and they work and do all their things. But at the end, when they get tired of it, they'd rather not work, and so they give up the attachments to family life for the higher taste of speculation. And that doesn't give them any that. Then they become Buddhists, and that doesn't. Then they end up back as karmis again.
Neanderthals.
Yes. Then they end up as Neanderthals. Yes.
Maharaj, when you're mentioning the speculation, I'm just thinking that what is the difference between the mental speculation, intellectual speculation, and philosophical speculation?
It's all the same, just different words. What's the difference between Golgappa and Puchka?
So intellectual and philosophical, I mean, they are also speculation.
Yeah.
Field where you speculate.
Yeah. You know, are you... Yeah, the difference is it on MG Road in Calcutta or MG Road in Bombay? No? He got it. You don't get it.
I get it. This, like, sometimes, like, I heard some devotees saying that, like, the philosophical speculation is like is okay. I mean, we just like link philosophy with our own story and then we write books. Then it's okay. But the mental speculation is condemned.
And so, what are they doing this philosophical speculation with?
I mean, sometimes some fiction story is being taken to prove, I mean, to preach Krishna consciousness. Like, for preaching Krishna consciousness, there's some basis is being made of some fiction story.
And that's mental speculation. But now you're saying that's all right. But before you were saying philosophical was all right, but mental speculation is not.
Yeah, so I asked this question to some devotee that why we are using fiction to prove the potency of the holy name. To verify the potency of the holy name, why we are using a fictional story. So then what I answer that philosophical speculation is allowed.
But why is that? Why is it philosophical instead of mental?
Why is philosophical allowed and not mental?
No, but how are they different?
They say that.
That'd be like saying I have a pan. So do I cook in it? Do I fry in it? Mm-hmm. You know, do I heat things in it? Mm-hmm. Is there a difference?
I'm using pan in different ways.
Yeah, but it's the same pan.
Yeah, it's the same pan. Pan is same.
Yeah, so then, philosophical means, if philosophical speculation's all right, and you're using philosophy to speculate on, is that not what the Mayavadis are doing? Why are they mental speculation? Because you say it has to be fiction. And, you know, are they sitting around discussing on, you know, on whether that was appropriate that Harry Potter had the Philosopher's Stone in his pocket or not?
So does this all this Nyaya, Vashishta, they are philosophical speculators like Jaimini Rishi?
No, you see, you've made these three into separate, completely different categories when they're one thing. What are you speculating about? Philosophy. What are you using for doing that? Mechanically, you're using the intellect, but what you choose to intellectualize on, that's the mind. So you're just looking at different features of the same thing.
Yeah. So in the speculation, I'm trying to speculate using the mind. In the intellectual speculation, I'm trying to speculate using intelligence.
They're the same thing.
The same thing is there. It's speculation ultimately.
Yes. So the point is when you're taking the philosophy and trying to apply it into your situation practically, then you're using that same process, but you're starting with Shabda, and your purpose is to please Krishna. But when you're using that process without its connection to Krishna, it's called mental speculation. Just like, okay, you're engaging the sense in the sense object. Okay? So now, let us say the tongue is tasting something. Right? Now if it's prasad, we call it prasad seva. If it's not, we call it sense gratification. Same exact thing. Same preparation, same tongue. Right? You know, all the friends come, they open the box, they start eating. That's sense gratification. You know, they open the box, they offer it to Krishna, then start eating. That's then service. Right? Unless there's pineapple on it. Then it is not service. Right? Yes, then it's rasa bhas. So Rupa Goswami has discussed that in Nectar of Devotion. Okay? And then pineapple and ketchup? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is the process of using the intellect to understand Shabda into your practical situation, right? You're going to have Shabda and you have Pratyaksha. What's in between? Anuman. Anuman is the process of speculation. So if you start with Pratyaksha and use Anuman, it's always going to be speculation. If you start with Shabda and then use Anuman, then that process is what is of value. As long as your purpose is to get it to Pratyaksha that you can now use in Krishna's service. But if you're hearing Shabda and using it for other purposes than to please Krishna, then it's again mental speculation. The mechanics are mechanics. You drive a car. Let us say you're a complete gross materialist, okay? And you're driving down a marine drive, okay? So if you turn the wheel right, which way does the car go? Right? Okay. Then let's say we push on the gas. Does it go faster? Yeah, what if we push on the brake? What if we push on the clutch? Right? What if we move the little stick around? Okay? But we're a gross materialist. It works like this. Okay? Now, let us say you're a pure devotee. And you're driving the same car down the same marine drive. Okay? When you turn the wheel to the right, which way does the car go? Okay, what happens when you push on the petrol? Yeah, what happens if you push on the brake or the thing and move the little stick around? It's exact. Mechanics are same. But when it's used for Krishna, it's seen in one way. When it's not used for Krishna, it's seen in another way. So that's the whole point. They're just trying to justify philosophical speculation. But where's the definition? Unless it's service to Krishna, how is it there? So if they're saying, oh no, but you can do this, philosophical is all right, but mental is not, because mental is, you know, just means you make up things. But if you make up things, but it's used to do something for Krishna, then it's... So they're showing if it's connected to Krishna, it's fine. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's not fine. But the point is you have to start with Krishna. You can't start with some modern thing and then try to fit Krishna into it. You can, but it's very backwards and it'll be very difficult and you'll, you know, disturb yourself and others. Does that make sense? So it's simple. You offer it to Krishna, it's fine. You don't offer it to Krishna, it's not fine. Does that make sense?
So the reason why I ask this question is that I see that many books are there in this form being written by the contemporary authors also.
And what does that have to do with what we're discussing here? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, don't do that to us. Okay. Uttara. That cannot be so. Because the illusion of the universe, it is different from mistaking shell for real existing silver. What does not exist at all cannot exist in illusion. If it doesn't exist, it can't exist in illusion also. Point is, because they're trying to say, oh, it's the previous impressions. And impressions are just illusion, but they have substance. So therefore, substance goes to substance. So even in their example, they're using substance to substance. But then they're trying to say, no, it's illusion, but it's an illusion. It doesn't. It has no effect on, you know what I'm saying? You know, the tiger in my dream just came and took your book bag and ran off with it. You know, and filled it full of yogurt with flowers in the sky. And now is selling it for a big profit. You know? Yes. You know, so he has this guy said, and you're saying, what is he talking about? My bag's right here. Did you check inside for yogurt?
It's only word jugglery. It is only word jugglery.
Yes, basically. Yeah, tell them to turn around and shout towards the ghost shala. You know, they can continue shouting, but just face the other way. One cannot mistake a rope for a snake unless a snake exists. In the inference of the opponent, it amounts to an upadi. Illusory universe is causing the upadi with no beginning or basis. If there's an illusion, it can't create another illusion. It doesn't exist. So that's the whole point. Is they're trying to say it doesn't exist, but it has all this influence. And then the fun part is, by their philosophy, we don't exist, so what does it matter? So why are they even discussing all this stuff? This universe appears in Brahman as an imposition of another universe already existing somewhere, since it arises by illusion. Let us accept the fallacy that the universe is like the illusion of silver on seeing a shell. Still, the sinful man will eventually show his evil nature. Thus, in rejecting the illusory universe, one must eventually accept that some real universe actually exists. The universe is still proven to be true. You know, you say it's not, but then the point is then that previous universe. At some point, you're going to see what's going on.
They're constructing something.
Huh?
Breaking the thing and constructing something.
That's fine, but they don't have to yell so loud.
To show who is the boss.
Hmm?
Just to show who is the boss.
Yeah, yeah. Because the unfailing experience of silver remains even at a latter time, little awareness, like awareness of a dream, the proposition of Advaita can never be accepted. They also accept that a disease of the eye makes a conch seem yellow, and that the fault is not produced simply by illusion. There is actually conch, right? They'll say, oh, but it's not real, but there's a conch that looks real. I mean, looks yellow. And you have an eye that's there, though, because of the disease condition, it makes things look yellow. But there is a conch and there's an eye. Right? So that's the problem is they'll say illusion, then they'll use something in reality to show that shows an illusion, but they're leaving out that what they're showing is something real. So, yeah? Yes?
So basically saying, we can say that illusion exists on its own.
Yes.
It has to connect with the real object.
Yes.
So this is the cause, and the illusion can be the effect, but as an effect it doesn't exist, so we can't base illusion on illusion.
Yes.
Somehow it has to connect to Brahman, if only yes. Brahman exists.
Yes.
So there should be a connection, but they just trying to disconnect it.
Yes. You know. They want to say it is connected, but then as soon as you say, but Brahman can't, oh no, it's not connected. So that's the whole thing, is they're trying to establish something bogus based on the authority of the bogusness. You know? So you know, why should I do this? Because I said so. So, you know, like that, you know, like our man next door here. Like that. So that's the difficulty, is that the real is there. Due to illusion, you see it in the wrong way. That doesn't mean what you see in the wrong way doesn't exist. It exists in the true form. Just like the material world, it exists, but due to illusion, we're seeing it separate from what it actually is. We're seeing it as a place for us to enjoy. But actually, no, it's Krishna's universe. He's still the enjoyer. And so we have to give up the illusion. Just like for the eye, you have to then treat the disease so then it sees properly. But they just take it as throw everything out. So you can see it's very pessimistic. And especially the Mayavadi, it has that basis in anger. So they just try to destroy everything. Yeah? And at that point you're making, that's very good. You can't base an illusion on something that's not there. You know, unless, of course, you're a government. They know how to do that. But it's still, it's the government, it's real people produce it. You know, based around things that people value. So the whole point is that even an illusion has to be based on reality. You know, it just means an improper understanding of reality. Ignorance means not seeing it properly. Those who maintain that Ishwara creates the universe say that just as the universe is created by the Lord, not the jiva, so dreams are created by the Lord. Sandhye, Sritir, Ahahi. The Lord creates creates objects in dreams because that is stated in the text. Nir Mataram, Chaike, Putradhayascha. The Lord is the creator of dream objects because the Kuttas say that the Lord is the creator of dream objects such as suns. Brahma Sutra 3:2, 1, and 2. The Lord is the creator of objects in dreams just as He is the creator of objects in the waking state. Since the dream objects sometimes occur in impossible times and places, it is concluded that only the Lord can do this since He can do the impossible. Hence, flowers in sky in yogurt. Maya matram tu karshneya bhi vyakta saru patvat. The cause is the Lord's maya because the dreams by nature are not revealed to everyone. Brahma Sutra 3:2-3. The dream objects are accepted as real since they predict real future events, just as medicines or mantras are said to give certain results. Su chakas cha hi shuter achakshate cha tad vidhaha. So, because the dream objects indicate future results, because Shruti describes the truth of dreams, and because knowers of dreams actually predict results, dream objects are real. Brahma Sutra 3:2-4. One sees cases of a person who in a dream sees a man with black teeth attacking him. This later comes true. The jiva cannot end the dream. Para bhi jnana tu tirohitam tat talahyasya banta vipar yayao. Dreams disappear by the will of the Lord. This is not surprising, since He is also the cause of bondage and liberation. Brahma Sutra 3:2-5. Because Shruti says that the Lord creates dream objects, it is also accepted that the Lord creates dreams, and the dreams have real objects as in the waking state. Ramanujacharya explains as follows. According to the pious and sinful acts of the living being, the Lord creates objects corresponding to the particular individual and limited to a particular time. The dream objects are described in Shruti. Yoga na pantano bhavantyartha ratan rata na tatra ratra na ratra yogavan pata srijate sahi karta. In that place, there are no chariots, no horses, and no roads. He creates the chariots, horses, and roads. The Lord is the creator of the dream objects. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4:3-10. Though these objects do not exist as things experienced by all others at this time, they exist as the experience of the particular individual. Thus, the Lord creates those objects. The words, "He is the creator," end quote, indicate that the Lord does this by His astonishing power of satyasankalpa. Saesha supteshu jagarti kamam purusho nirmi manam. Tad eva sukram tad brahma tad eva mritam uchate. Tasmim loka shrita sarve tadu mat yeti kaschana. The Lord creates the desires while sleeping and in waking state. That Lord is called Brahman, pure and immortal. All people take shelter of Him. Nothing exceeds Him. Katha Upanishad 2:28. Interesting, you've never come across this particular discussion before about dreams. At least I haven't. You come across these? Yes, it's an interesting topic. It means it's all part of establishing that we're talking about there's an illusion and all that, so Brahman has also created this illusion. But it's through the transformation of the Shaktis. You know, because you can't say it's not there. It is there. It's called a dream. That's why everybody can talk about it, because it's something it has substance for the particular living entity. Maybe not for someone else, but you have the same dream, but it's created by the Lord. Does that make sense? But it's an illusion. But also in the waking state, He creates everything here, so He also creates in the sleeping state. Right? So it's all coming from the Lord. But he's not transforming his energies. Right? The dream is transforming, not him.
I think the whole confusion happens because we mix the experience of objects and objects themselves. Because what illusion is, or as they say, vivarta, is our experience of objects. But objects, they are what they are.
Yes.
Doesn't have nothing to do with the experience that we are, you know, getting from those objects. Because the experience is subjective. But objects, you know, they are describable. They are what they are.
Yes. But that works in the inverse way, as you said. But if you do it in the original way, why is that object there? You know, it's just like, let's say, in your living room, why are there certain curtains? Why a certain pattern? Why certain colors? Why are they draped in a certain way? Why is that picture on the wall? Why is the couch where it is? Why that couch? Why those pillows? Why that table? Why those magazines? All that's there, we can say, is those are all just things. You know, but why are they there?
For purpose.
Yes. And so that whole thing is what is not comes out in that discussion. Is yes, that object is there, and it is but so they're taking it in here, as you were saying, the object is concrete, the experience is abstract, but it's actually the other way around. Right? Because that object is put there to give a particular experience. Krishna has made trees because they give a particular experience. So the experience of the tree, that taste, that rasa, that's the reality. That's the concrete aspect. That's what Krishna has done. The other things, yes, he is there, but the important point is the experience. But that's the point, is that the speculative knowledge puts it the other way. And then the theistic puts it in this way. You know what I'm saying? Or you get a mix where, you know, it's about that, but it's about myself, you know? So then that's the pious materialist. So,
yeah, because if I thought, when we're discussing, I thought about this pattern, and then, but if experience is concrete and the object is abstract, then who's getting the experience? If we as jiva getting the experience of ignorance, means we're superior to Brahman. And if...
Why would we be superior to Brahman?
Because he doesn't have any experience. We experience.
But that's... But whose Brahman is that? That's the impersonalist Brahman.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. According to their theory.
Yeah.
If we experience even ignorance, doesn't matter what we experience.
Yeah.
Then we are higher than Brahman. And if Brahman experience ignorance, then the jiva doesn't really matter. Because it's his own experience.
Yeah. But it's all, or it makes you as equals, or, you know, so it's always a mess unless you understand Brahman as a person. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's yeah, they come up with some things. Well, it's just like the thing we were saying before. If we fell from Brahman, then I'm actually, you know, Brahman's the lowest level. I'm doing action, so I'm actually in a higher position. So why is everybody getting on my case to be more serious? I've already moved forward from Brahman to here, so at least give me a break. You know, it's the same kind of thing. You know, it's like a... Yes, so this is how the speculation works, is they're starting from the wrong direction. They're not starting with the premise that it's about the Lord. And so because of that, then all these problems come up. Does that make sense? Yes, so that becomes the big difficulty, is that they're starting wrong. So the experience is concrete. But the point is that concrete may be within illusion. Means it's not the actual. Means you've gotten an experience of the abstract, but you're not. But the point is why is it abstract? Because it's the form through which Krishna's potency is being manifest. So what's important is the Lord. But we're seeing it as abstract because we can either go to the Lord or take it as something else. You know, physics is based on this principle. Is that they'll say the wall is there. No, there's millions of walls. There's not one wall because everybody will perceive it differently. And which is correct. But the whole point is they're not bringing in where does the potency for that come from. That they're not establishing. They're just happily going on with that ignorance. And then fighting between the physicists and the chemists over lordship. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Yeah, you see, when you get into speculation, you can go anywhere. That's the thing. So as soon as you bring in the Lord, then the whole thing becomes corrected. So, but that's why they don't want to bring in the Lord, because then their fun is over. But since the speculation can go any direction. And, you know, so because speculation, you can get anything out of it. But the idea is that I have my own taste because I'm an individual. So the particular taste that I have, then we make the hermeneutics or the interpretation based around what will give my taste. So therefore, the hermeneutics of the Mayavad will give a certain taste. Because in the speculative process, you can end up with any of the schools. But they design it so that you'll come up with their taste. But our point is, no, we're trying to come up with Krishna's taste. And if he tastes, we taste. So yes, you do have these unlimited, and then there's Krishna. So in the spiritual world, they only have one view. Different, you know, different tastes within the view, but only one view. So that's all. You always have to bring it back to that one thing, because otherwise, by habit, we'll get off and we'll argue over an impression, whether it's right or wrong or this or that. But we forget, what does Krishna say about it? What's his standard? You know, like that. What does he say?